This has been a strong week for oil prices. Our markets reporter takes us behind the scenes of recent developments you might have missed. Plus, we'll tackle a topic that directly affects the economy with a closer look at where the presidential candidates stand on immigration.
There's a difference in philosophy there where Joe Biden just really wants to grow the system, where Donald Trump does not.
With the election quickly approaching, we begin a new series looking at the candidates' views on the biggest issues facing America. And will COVID-19 ever go away? The Journal asks Dr. Fauci himself. It's Thursday, September 17th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is what's news. President Trump is publicly countering his CDC director on COVID-19 vaccine timing and the importance of wearing masks. As we talked about last night on the podcast, CDC Director Robert Redfield testified in Congress that a vaccine may not be widely available until next summer, and he said masks are important for prevention. Here's what the president said.
I mean, you know, you have two questions. Maybe he misunderstood both of them. But the answer to the one is it's going to be a much faster distribution than he said. Maybe he's not aware of the distribution process. It's not really his thing as much as it would be, let's say, mine. But the distribution is going to be much faster. As far as the mask is concerned, I hope that the vaccine is going to be a lot more beneficial than the masks.
Separately from that exchange, Dr. Anthony Fauci spoke to the Wall Street Journal about what's needed to beat the pandemic.
With a combination of a good vaccine together with good public health measures, we may be able to put this coronavirus outbreak behind us the way we put the original SARS behind us and the way hopefully we'll put MERS or the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome behind us. I think we can do it with a combination of a vaccine and good public health measures. So I'm optimistic about this, even though we're going through globally a terrible time right now. There will be an end to this, and we will be able to get back to normal.
The impact of the Western wildfires now stretches thousands of miles. Millions of residents across Oregon and California are being told to stay indoors because of dangerously bad air. There's now so much smoke that a haze is filling the skies as far as New York and chunks of the eastern seaboard. The word on the ground is that gaining control of the blazes could take weeks. The number of people applying for unemployment aid is expected to hold steady at high levels. New weekly numbers are out later today. We'll tell you what they say about the big picture on tonight's podcast. Another chapter in a wild year for oil prices with this week's rebound. The reasons include a series of hurricanes and, of course, our old friend supply and demand. Energy reporter David Hadari explains.
So oil has been staging something of a resurgence over the past few days, and those gains have in large part been driven by a drop of supply in the US. The International Energy Agency said on Tuesday that Hurricane Laura had helped cut US supply by 400,000 barrels a day last month. That was then followed by US data Tuesday, Wednesday, that surprisingly showed that inventories in the country have dropped since then as well. The fact that Hurricane Sally made landfall in the Gulf of Mexico yesterday has also added to forecasts of disrupted US supply, with around a quarter of offshore oil production in the Gulf being halted as a precaution. Of course, that comes on the back of a few weeks of very downbeat trading, with the combination of rising coronavirus figures stalling demand and rising supply from OPEC and its allies as they relax their production cuts.
The Business Roundtable may not have the most exciting name, but it's made up of CEOs of America's biggest companies. So when it announces a major change, it's important to pay attention, since that signals where U.S. corporations are moving. And the Business Roundtable has just come out with a major statement on climate change, backing sharp cuts in greenhouse gas emissions. The Journal's chief economics commentator, Greg Ipp, has some perspective.
This is the first business group that actually represents companies across every sector of the American economy, whether it's retail and finance or technology and manufacturing, even oil and gas, to come out in favor of not just action on climate change, but very aggressive targets, reducing emissions by 80% by 2050 and taking the measures that are necessary to do that. For example, the Business Roundtable says there should be a price on carbon. That could be either a carbon tax or it could be a cap and trade system. The problem in the past has always been that business would often say they're in favor of action on climate change, but they would oppose the specific measures that Congress would come up with or that an administration would come up with.
The American immigration issue isn't just a high-stakes question for immigrants themselves. It impacts the job market and U.S. companies, big and small. Everyone in America and everyone who wants to come to America has a stake in this. So the election will have enormous consequences. Our immigration reporter will break down where President Trump and Joe Biden stand right after this. In ongoing election coverage, we're taking a deep look at how President Trump and Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden differ on major policy issues. Today, we're drilling down on immigration. The answers to questions of who can live or work in America or become Americans in 2021 and beyond could be very different depending on who wins in November. Let's bring in the Journal's Michelle Hackman, who covers immigration policy. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle, as you know, there are so many layers to this discussion. Let's start with the big picture and set the framework. What is the fundamental difference in philosophy and approach to immigration between Joe Biden and President Trump?
President Trump, during the 2016 campaign, really made immigration his central focus. And the arguments he sort of made were around safety. You know, immigrants were coming to the United States and committing crimes. Now, we've since seen sort of his arguments evolve a bit from there. He's now, you know, more recently making an economic argument that immigrants are taking jobs of Americans. He's actually put some bans in place to prevent a lot of people from coming to the United States to either to work or to move here because he believes that they're taking, you know, jobs that could go to Americans during the pandemic. And I think on the other end of the spectrum, you have Joe Biden, who during the Obama administration may have actually pursued some similar policies as Donald Trump. You know, deportations were actually higher annually during the Obama administration, and they certainly had some tough border enforcement policies. But Joe Biden's rhetoric is sort of taking the opposite approach, calling America the nation of immigrants and, you know, talking about how immigrants are key to growing our economy and our, you know, wealth as a country.
Let's tackle some specific issues. Obviously, the border has been a point of conversation for years. What's the difference between the Trump and Biden approaches?
Sure. So the most famous border issue, obviously, is President Trump's promise that he would build a wall. And in the last year, he actually has begun to do that. And Joe Biden has said he would immediately stop that construction once he takes office. I think the more important difference, actually, though, is that the president and his administration have adopted a whole range of policies that are meant to deter people from crossing the border to begin with. You know, they've made it a lot tougher, almost impossible to qualify for asylum after, you know, once you come across the border. And so that's supposed to take away the incentive. And Joe Biden disagrees with that approach. You know, he says there are legitimate asylum claims and we should handle those. But he talks about working with countries in Central America, you know, providing them more aid to try to alleviate some of the causes that are bringing people to leave their countries, you know, the extreme poverty, the gang violence. So I think that's a fundamental difference in the way the two men think.
Another issue is legal immigration and the process surrounding it. Comparing Trump and Biden, where's the divide?
I would say it's large. You know, President Trump at times has talked about this notion of being in favor of merit-based immigration. What he means by that is, you know, possibly increasing the number of visas or green cards going to high-skilled foreigners who could maybe come here. He has often balanced that with a corresponding, you know, steep cut in other sorts of immigration. A lot of immigration to the United States is actually family-based, you know, people bringing over parents, children, spouses, things like that. And Joe Biden has said, you know, both of those are really important. And Joe Biden has also talked about this notion of, you know, he wants to be able to staple a green card, you know, permanent residence card to a diploma, particularly of people graduating with STEM degrees here, foreigners. And so I think there's a difference in philosophy there where Joe Biden just really wants to grow the system where Donald Trump does not.
Another point to discuss is the future of young people and DACA, a program protecting immigrants living in the U.S. since childhood without legal permission. The courts have been involved. What about the candidates?
The Trump administration has indicated that it wants to end DACA. The Supreme Court said it took the wrong approach when it attempted to end DACA. But that leaves the door open to the administration trying again. And it has said, you know, that decision is under review right now, and it would probably act within the next few months to do that. And so, you know, if Joe Biden were to be elected, he has already said he would restore, you know, the DACA program to its fullest extent.
The Journal's Michelle Hackman in Washington. Michelle, enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
And if you want to know more about how the candidates differ on other major policy issues, we've got a special Election 2020 page on WSJ.com. And finally, for most of us, the office routine, including everything from a coffee break with a coworker to lunch in the cafeteria, just isn't happening. This isn't anecdotal. We've pulled the data on just how empty offices are in major cities. And other types of workspaces are also quiet. The Journal's Katie Riley crunched the numbers.
Different cities have kind of recovered in different ways. So, for example, New York is still across offices, but also manufacturing, warehouses, and retail is still very low across the board, like less than 50% of occupancy of activity inside of buildings. But then somewhere like Miami, the retail market has barely dipped. So retail spaces are seeing 92% of the activity that they had before the pandemic. So the recovery is kind of patchy, which is interesting.
That is what's news for Thursday. We're back tonight with an updated episode. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.